Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Shmini. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Parsha Shmini. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha is Parsha Shmini. I apologize in advance for the quality of this recording. Unfortunately, I experienced certain technical difficulties, but I hope you will be duly compensated by the content. In this week's Parsha, we are told of the death of Aaron's two sons. I would like to examine rabbinic responses to death, to tragedy, to our Parsha. There is an attachment, so please follow along. This selection is taken from what is known as a minor tractate. Passages which are originate from the time of the Mishnah. The particular minor tractate is called Smachot, which is a euphemism, because it deals with laws of mourning. We are looking at Smachot, chapter 8, Halachot 8, 9, and 11. When Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yishmael were condemned to death, Rabbi Yishmael was weeping. But Rabbi Shimon the Great said, "You are only two steps from being received in the bosom of the righteous in the world to come, and you are weeping?" And he replied, "Do I weep because we are going to be slain? I am weeping because we will be slain as if we were murderers and violators of the Sabbath." Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Shmuel are two of the famous 10 martyrs who we read about in an elegy which appears in the keynote, the elegies of Tisha B'Av, and which also appears in the Tfilah of Yom Kippur, the Musaf of Yom Kippur. And we are told of how they were put to death. And Rabbi Shmuel was weeping. Not only was he weeping, but he raised a very difficult question. Why are we being put to death as common thieves, as violators of the Sabbath? And note Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's response. Perhaps you were once sitting at a meal or sleeping, and a woman came to ask you a halachic question regarding her menstruation, laws that have to do with ritual purity and impurity. And at the time your servant said to her that you were asleep, "Come back later." Does not the Torah say, "If you shall afflict him, then I shall become angry and kill you by the sword"? What a fascinating response. Rabbi Shimon is saying to Rabbi Yishmael, "You are crying because in effect you are saying, why are we dying this way? It is unfair. It is unjust. But it could be that maybe there is justice here. For it says in the Torah, if you afflict the orphan, the poor, the stranger, people who are in a very vulnerable position, God will become angry and kill you by the sword." And how does Rabbi Shimon apply this verse? Perhaps a woman came to ask you a halachic question, and you were too busy, and you pushed her away. "Come back later." And she was grieved. She was hurt, insulted. Perhaps for that injustice, you are being put to death. This passage is something which is very difficult for us to deal with. But I'd like to at least begin to understand what is a traditional Jewish approach. And that is, when death occurs, when a tragedy happens, our gut reaction is to do soul searching, to ask ourselves, why did this happen? What did we do to deserve this? Before condemning God, let us examine ourselves. And what is so striking and yet at the same time painful about Rabbi Shimon's response is that God is extremely meticulous, exacting with the righteous, with the leaders, with those in positions of power, who for the slightest wrong will be punished exceedingly. I would venture to say that Rabbi Shimon is not glib in offering this response, but in effect is saying to Rabbi Ishmael, we do not know by what criteria God judges us. Little things, which we brush off, in fact could be major. And so that therefore, the initial response is take responsibility for what you did. Examine yourself. Do soul searching. Let's continue. After they were executed, the news came to Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, and they arose, put sackcloth on their loins, tore their garments, and said, "Brother Israelites, listen to us. If good were to come to the world, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shmuel would certainly have been the first to receive it. But now it is known before the one who said, 'Let the world be,' that great calamities are about to befall the world. Therefore did these depart from the world. As it says in Isaiah, 'He shall come to his father in peace. They shall lie in their resting place.'" Note how Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava respond to what happened to Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Ishmael. They do not begin by examining what is it that they did wrong, which I think is a very important lesson. When something happens to someone else, you should not point fingers, condemn them. When Rabbi Ishmael is weeping, Rabbi Shimon has the right to say this, because Rabbi Shimon is not only talking to Rabbi Ishmael, he is talking to himself. Rabbi Shimon is not saying categorically, "This is why you are being punished." Perhaps Rabbi Shimon is inviting him, helping him to grapple with this question, to look within himself, to perhaps find some sort of explanation for what is happening. But with Rabbi Akiva and with Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, the two have already been put to death. Their words are not directed to the ones who are being killed. Their words are really to themselves. How do we understand what happened to them? And interestingly, they do not look in the realm of sin to blame them, to condemn them, to come up with, as I said earlier, a glib explanation of what happened. The approach they take is very different. Perhaps, in fact, what happened is the lesser of two evils. Perhaps they're being put to death now, as horrific as it is, on some level is actually good. As they say, if good were to come to the world, they would have been the first to receive it. But if they have now been put to death, that does not bode well. That is indicative that great tragedies, calamities, are about to befall us. And that in fact, what looks to us as a punishment, on a certain level was a blessing. They were spared from observing, from experiencing those horrific tragedies. It raises a very interesting question. To what degree is it that we are able to put certain events in perspective, and things which seem horrible on a relative scale may in fact not be so bad? But then we come to the next passage. Number 9. When Rabbi Akiva was executed in Caesarea, the news came to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and Rabbi Chanina ben Tradjon. And they also arose, and they put sackcloth on their loins. And it's conceivable that they also rent their garments. And once again they said, "Brother Israelites, listen to us. Rabbi Akiva was not put to death because of robbery, nor because he had not toiled in study of Torah with all his might. He was killed only to be a sign, as it is written, 'Thus shall Ezekiel be to you for a sign. According to all that he did, you shall do when it, calamity, happens. Then shall you know that I am the Lord your God.'" When Rabbi Akiva was put to death, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and Rabbi Chanina ben Tradjon made it perfectly clear that one could not ascribe any wrong to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who was the embodiment of Torah and Chesed, the leading scholar of his generation. And the language that they use is not just that he was knowledgeable, learned, toiled in Torah. His whole essence was connected with study and teaching of Torah. Stealing, interpersonal relations. I will add, Rabbi Akiva is the one who said that the fundamental principle of the Torah is V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. We know that Rabbi Akiva was a wealthy man who was involved in distributing charity to the poor. In every way, Rabbi Akiva was beyond reproach. Interestingly, the explanation which Rabbi Akiva offered to deal with the death of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Ishmael could not be applied to him. Rabbi Akiva, who was killed either during or in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba rebellion, who saw the devastation of the Jewish people, the Holocaust of his day. You couldn't say that Rabbi Akiva was killed to spare him from worse. There was no worse. The only explanation that could be given was Rabbi Akiva's death was meant to be a sign. The word in Hebrew, mofet, is a wonder. There are two ways of understanding this, and it really hinges on how you understand the idea of mofet, as a sign or as a wonder. If we understand it as a sign, which would mean something that we look at, that we need to emulate, especially in light of the verse which is brought subsequently from Ezekiel, where Ezekiel tells the people, "Everything which I have just done, you should see as a sign for you to emulate, when in fact the destruction will come. And then you will know that I am the Lord." We know from other references in Midrashic literature, in the Talmud, in Masechet Brachot, that when Rabbi Akiva was being taken out, tortured to death, his response was to laugh. And when he was asked, "Why are you laughing?" a question posed by his students, his response was that "My whole life I taught you should love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Even if you are suffering, even if God is asking you to give up your life, you should love God." And in effect, Rabbi Akiva was saying to them, "Now is the time when I can put my money where my mouth is. Now is the time when I can demonstrate that I not only talk the talk, but walk the walk. Where even in a moment like this, my love of God is unswerving." Hence, Rabbi Akiva becomes a sign for us of what loving God means. Loving God is not only toiling in Torah, not only being righteous, charitable, not only in times of plenty, but perhaps even in those moments of tremendous tragedy, when every question could be raised, why is this happening to me? Instead of raising those questions, we continue to demonstrate our love of God. There are many stories that have been handed down to us, eyewitness accounts of Jews during the Holocaust, who in the midst of all the devastation, all of the mass murders, maintained their human dignity and their divine image, maintained their faith and devotion to God. This is one way of understanding that Rabbi Akiva's death was meant to be to us a sign, to show us the lengths to which one is to go in their love of God. But there's another way of taking it, which I think is truer to the word mofet. Mofet means a wonder, something beyond our comprehension. And perhaps Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and Rabbi Chanina ben Tradyon were saying there is no explanation that we can give for the death of Rabbi Akiva. There is no way that we can make sense out of it. The only thing that we can do is stand in awe, perhaps grit our teeth, and be mystified, be in silence. And this leads me to what we have in Halakha 11, a statement by Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, there is a king who has four sons. One is struck and is silent. The second rebels. The third prays for mercy. And the fourth says to his father, strike me, because I deserve it. Abraham was struck, but was silent, as it is written. Take now your son, your only one, whom you love, Isaac, and offer him there for a burnt offering. Abraham should have said, the other day you told me, for in Isaac shall your seed be called. And nevertheless it is written, and Abraham rose up early in the morning. Job was struck and rebelled, as it is written, I will say to God, do not condemn me. Let me know why you have striven with me. Hezekiah was struck, and he prayed for mercy, as it is written. And Hezekiah prayed before the Lord. And according to some, even Hezekiah rebelled because he said, did I not do what is good in your eyes? But David is the one who said to his father, strike me, as it is written. Wash me thoroughly from my sin, and cleanse me from my error. Interestingly, Rabbi Akiva gives us four models of responses to suffering, to tragedy. Let's do it out of order. Job, and perhaps Hezekiah, are models of people who rebel. When they are struck down, they challenge God, they wrestle with God. They argue and say, why did you do this? What have I done? One could make the argument that there is a certain legitimacy in their response, insofar as both are described, as being righteous individuals, who when they see the tragedies that befall them, don't understand why. In the same way that Rabbi Yishmael was weeping, somehow the punishment seems incommensurate with the crime. But then we have another model. Abraham, when God tells him to sacrifice his son, in the text, he is silent. It is especially striking since the same Abraham, when he's told by God of the impending destruction of Sodom, argues, challenges. Yet when he is told about the sacrifice of Isaac. His silence is deafening. You find numerous midrashic comments that read between the lines, look for the cracks, the questioning, and in fact say that Abraham, during the 3 days from his being told by God to sacrifice until he comes to Mount Moriah, Abraham has doubts which continually gnaw away. Yet nevertheless, those doubts seem to be running through his mind, but he is silent. And perhaps this reflects the idea of the mystery, of the wonder that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and Rabbi Hanina regarding the death of Rabbi Akiva. It is something completely beyond our comprehension. And in the face of this, we are silent. The last response suggested by Rabbi Akiva was King David, where King David says, strike me, with the implication being, I welcome it. Perhaps I deserve it. This is a form of expiation. King David's response is understandable in light of what I said at the beginning. There were various things in his life which he did, which were sinful. Perhaps the most significant expression, the incident with Bathsheba. And to his credit, David took responsibility for his actions and perhaps welcomes the difficulties that he experiences, the tragedies he experiences, as being some form of expiation for his sins. I would like to suggest that perhaps each of these four, or I should say three, approaches are legitimate and have their place. And now I would like to see our parsha. When Aaron's two sons die, this is chapter 10 in verse 3. Moses' response is to say to Aaron, is this not what God had once said to me? Through those that are close to me, I shall be sanctified. And before the whole people, I will be honored. What happened now is somehow supposed to be a sanctification of God's name. In fact, in the Midrash, there are many opinions that look for the sin of Aaron's two sons, Nadav and Avihu. And we have discussed this in a previous podcast. The text itself would seem to indicate that what they did was wrong, and that this was clearly a punishment by God. And Moses tries to somehow put it in the language of Rabbi Shimon, who is talking to Rabbi Ishmael. Perhaps what they did was on a certain level, minor. Yet nevertheless, given who they were, God measures them by a different standard. And hence, the severity, the instantaneous nature of the punishment. Interestingly, in the case of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Ishmael, we don't hear Rabbi Ishmael's response. In our case, Aaron's response is silence. And this is seen by the rabbis as an expression of his greatness. He does not rebel, does not call out against God. He is resigned to his fate. Not only is he resigned, he continues to carry on the role of that eighth day of the consecration of the tabernacle. It is also clear from various midrashim that Aaron, like Avraham, has his doubts, has his questions, that this is an extremely painful situation for him. And in fact, later on, when Moses becomes upset that one of the sacrifices was burned and was not eaten, Aaron responds and says, after what has happened today, would this be favorable to God? And once again, between the lines, we can feel that Aaron is saying, yes, I will carry on the show. I will do the will of God. I will grit my teeth. But it is painful. It is difficult. He needs to play the role, but at the same time, he feels the deep pain. And no matter how anybody will try to explain why this happened to Nadav and Avihu, it will still mystify him. It will be difficult to console him. Note the fact that there are rabbinic comments that say that Aaron experienced this in response to the golden calf, to his role in the creation of the golden calf. I would even add there's a certain element of measure for measure. He threw the gold into the fire, and what emerged was a calf, the calf being idolatry. His sons, who brought a strange fire, were consumed by that fire. I would add that for both Aaron and for Abraham, perhaps the most difficult punishment, and I would even say not only for them, but for anyone, is to have to witness, and maybe even worse, be an instrument in the death of your own children. Over a week ago in Israel, we experienced a tremendous tragedy when a family was slaughtered on a Friday night. The parents, Udi and Ruti Fogel, and three of their children, one of them a baby of 3 months old. This event devastated the whole nation across the political spectrum, secular, religious. It didn't matter. And I speak for myself now, as someone who is a religious person, as someone who has a lot of faith in God. I look at what happened to this family. I certainly can't, by any stretch of the imagination, say that they deserved it. I would also hope that this is not a sign of calamities to come, so that the only thing that I'm left with is to be silent, to be in wonder, to grit my teeth, to be able to say, I just don't know, and to go on living. Despite all the doubts, despite all the questions, to feel the pain, and certainly whatever I experience is in no way comparable to the parents of Ruti and Udi, to the children that were left behind, to their 12-year-old daughter, who came home from being at a youth group to witness a horror. Yet somehow this is what we learn from our parsha. With all the pain and with all the horror, perhaps we need to be able to be silent, to be able to go on, to not be indifferent, but to somehow be able to affirm life. Let me end by saying, this week is Parshat Para, the Maftir, which speaks about the red heifer. And in a previous podcast, I mentioned that the whole section of the red heifer is coming to teach us that when we are confronted with death, we need to experience purification. We need to be able to affirm life. We need to acknowledge the death, to acknowledge the tragedy, to feel the tragedy. Yet at the same time, we need to continue to move on, because ultimately Judaism is a religion of life and of affirming life, of affirming our relationship, our love, the God of life. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.